This is the TTY Dialer, episode 11, for the week of January 2nd through January 7th. Hi there, this is Mark Levonier with your weekly companion to WRVO's old-time radio show Tuned to Yesterday. Every night of the week on the air, we bring you comedy, drama, mystery, western, sci-fi, and more from radio's golden age, and whenever you like, on demand at WRVO.org. This podcast brings you what's coming up for the week, along with fun with sound from radio's yesteryear and radio history as well. And as of late on the podcast anyway, I've been mentioning a lot of movies on the radio. And of course, many books were adapted on the air during radio's golden age. But you may not have heard of comics on the air.
I'm the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man. And I'm here to read the funnies to you happy boys and honeys. Yes, boys and girls, it's Comic Weekly time. And here I come right into your house to bring a little fun and happiness. Right out of the pages of Puck the Comic Weekly, straight into your living room, your friend, the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Little Miss Honey, how are you today?
I'm just fine, thank you. And you know what else I am?
Yes, I'm sure you're anxious to start reading Peter Pan today.
Yes, I am. I was so thrilled last week when I met Bobby Driscoll, who was in Walt Disney's movie of Peter Pan.
Yes, I thought you'd like that.
Oh, I did.
Well, then, my surprise made you happy, didn't it?
I should say so. Nothing could be more wonderful than to learn that we're going to read Peter Pan in the comic.
And for 25 weeks, too.
Oh, I won't miss one of them. So could we hurry now, please, and read the funny story?
Puck the Comic Weekly?
Yes.
Very well, I'll read that in just a moment. But before I do, let's listen to this nice man.
I'll take that. That was actor Lon Clark, the Comic Weekly Man, in what was really a remarkable show that had kids hooked, whether they had the Sunday funnies in front of them or not. It was on the air from 1947 to 54 on two networks and was produced by the Hearst Company, responsible for the large chain of Hearst newspapers, among other things, which in its Sunday edition featured a separate section called Puck, the Comic Weekly, the place for all the strips. The Comic Weekly Man show dramatized what are now classic strips like High and Lois, Prince Valiant, Flash Gordon, Donald Duck, Beetle Bailey, and many more. And they all featured full sound effects with host Lon Clark performing all of the voices and characterizations. The show was syndicated to stations who would insert their commercial where Clark indicated a moment ago, but the show's sponsorship sort of worked twofold. Local businesses could buy spots on the program, but the product itself was really the comic strips, which after this on-air treatment assuredly helped to sell the Sunday editions of Hearst newspapers. So let's hear a little more of that episode from this Tuesday, January 4th in 1953.
Now here we go with Puck the Comic Weekly. And on the first page of the first section under Bringing Up Father, Beetle Bailey.
Magic words for the music, please.
Very well, my lady. Toot me a toot and tweet me a tweedle. Squeeze out music for Bailey the Beetle. Beetle and his pals are at the home of a very nice lady who has invited them for a Sunday afternoon feed. Beetle's pal, Killer Diller, says, "Say, it was mighty nice of you to invite our company over this afternoon, Mrs. Van Dividen." Mrs. Van Dividen replies,
"Oh, but I didn't expect so many. I always thought two was a company."
Then Beetle and some other soldiers sidle over, and Beetle croaks,
"Can we help?"
"Oh, yes, yes. I need more cookies from the bakery, and someone could take out this bag of garbage."
Killer answers, "Well, Beetle's good with the garbage. I'll go get the cookies." A minute later, Beetle, with the sack of garbage in his hand, walks into the kitchen. A beautiful French maid looks up and says,
"Ah, you are just in time.
Hey, what a classy joint."
And then looking at the pretty maid,
"Even the KP is good looking."
Empty that bag in the silver tray and put it on the table in the library.
Beetle looks at the silver tray, then it is garbage. He thinks she's crazy, but last picture top row empties the garbage on the silver tray.
"This is the fanciest garbage pail I've ever seen."
"Now, boys, would anybody care to play parcheesi?"
First picture bottom row, Beetle has carried the silver tray with the garbage on it into the living room and set it on a table. One of the boys looks at the junk on the tray and exclaims,
"Hey, this looks like garbage."
Another GI says contemptuously,
quiet, you peasant. Ain't you never seen hors d'oeuvres before? Eat it.
And a moment later, Mrs. Van Dividen sees the GIs walking through the living room eating the garbage. She says to herself,
oh, my, what appetites. I should have gotten more food.
A few minutes later, the door opens. And Killer, who has been to the bakery, comes into the kitchen. Beetle says,
oh, Killer is back with the cookies.
The maid, startled, exclaims,
the cookies? But what did you put on the tray?
The garbage.
Oh, the garbage. Oh, my chop.
And last picture, the maid's in the living room. She sees Mrs. Van Dividen munching on the garbage and exclaims,
Madam, I... Hush, Nanette. Remember your social graces. Make the boys feel at home. Have an apricot.
The Comic Weekly man himself, Lon Clark, was also on radio, starring as Nick Carter, Master Detective, a very popular show. And for a period in the 1950s in New York City, according to Clark, both programs aired at the same time on Sunday morning. The Comic Weekly Man was pre-recorded and Nick Carter was live, and it made Lon Clark one of the few, if not the only, actors during that time to compete against himself on the air. This Monday on Tune to Yesterday, January 2nd, it's an hour of adventure at 10 o'clock with an audition broadcast of Safari, a really gripping episode. Then it's Escape from 1948. After that, Movies on the Air from the Lux Radio Theater from 1954. This Tuesday night, January 3rd at 10, comedy from Jack Benny and Bob Hope back-to-back. Then it's an hour of westerns with episodes of Half Gun Will Travel and Gunsmoke.
He's a nice little fella, ain't he, Mr. Dan?
Yeah, he seems to be, Chester.
Hey, what's he do for a living?
He's an Army scout, he says, on his way out to Fort Wallace.
Well, I always had in mind that scouts was more tricky. Shucks, he's no more sly than me.
Yeah, don't let Cuff fool you, Chester. He's small, but he can take care of himself.
Well, one thing, he don't seem to let nothing upset him, man.
Well, he's worried about his wife, Chester. Plenty.
Hear these shows this Monday, January 2nd, and Tuesday, January 3rd, from 10 to midnight on the air or streaming live online at WRVO.org. This Tuesday, January 3rd, marks a grim radio anniversary of sorts. It was on that day in 1946 that one of several radio propagandists during World War II was hanged for treason by the British government. This broadcaster was widely referred to as Lord Haw Haw. His real name was William Joyce, and he had pro-Nazi commentaries on the air in Germany in English, so the Allied American and British forces could understand him. Prior to this, Joyce had been a high-ranking member of the British Union of Fascists in the 1930s. He even modeled his haircut and mustache after Adolf Hitler. In 1939, he moved to Germany to work for the Nazi propaganda ministry until the spring of 1945. In May of that year, he was captured by British troops as he was trying to escape the country now crumbling around itself. He was tried and almost immediately found guilty of treason, and also promptly lost his appeal of that charge. So here's a bit of what he sounded like on the air during World War II, and you'll notice his business-like delivery is an attempt to subtly get under the skin of listening American and British forces in Germany at the time.
This morning, strong German forces have entered or have been landed in these two countries. To cover these military operations, extensive mine barrages have been laid. While British and French military experts are still writing articles, wondering why Germany has not yet started a blitzkrieg on the Western Front, the lightning-like actions of the German Defense Forces have informed Mr. Churchill and Monsieur Paul Reynaud that Germany is not prepared to allow Great Britain and France to infest the North Sea, the Arctic Sea, and Northern Europe with further strategic positions like Gibraltar, Malta, and Corsica. New Germany is determined to deal any power a decisive blow if that power stretches out its hands with the intention of throttling the German people. Germany has no quarrels with Denmark or Norway, but Germany has carefully studied the maritime history of Great Britain. She remembers Copenhagen in 1807. She remembers the seizing of Malta and Gibraltar. She remembers the bombardment of Alexandria in 1882 And she has not forgotten that England and France were making preparations to occupy the Balearic Islands during the Spanish Civil War. That attempt was frustrated by Italian watchfulness. Germany has for months been just as observant and alive to the danger which threatens all strategical points in Northern Europe that might serve as naval or air force bases for Great Britain and France in their war of destruction against Germany. Mr. Winston Churchill knows today that he has no longer any chance of repeating his exploits of Sydney Street, Antwerp, Gallipoli, and Murmansk. That versatile and agile amateur strategist is at last up against a leadership and a defense force of a people keyed up to a maximum of activity and having achieved the acme of technical perfection. They do not have to discuss the Blitzkrieg as a theoretical problem, because they are the human embodiment of that cleansing atmospheric phenomenon, the thunderstorm, which dispels the sultry atmosphere of intrigues and conspiracies, of political crime, and of indifference to human suffering.
Listeners to his broadcasts thought his pretentious delivery deserved the nickname of Lord Ha Ha, and recordings still exist of his final broadcast when he was in a drunken stupor, and one that was heard on the air just minutes after he temporarily evaded capture from the incoming Allies, who took the opportunity to get on the air themselves in his place.
And tonight, you will not hear Views on the News by William Joyce. For Mr. Joyce, Lord Haw-Haw to most of us in Britain, has been most unfortunately interrupted in his broadcasting career, and at present has left, rather hurriedly, for a vacation. An extremely short vacation, if the Second British Army has anything to do with it, maybe to Denmark and other points north. And in his place, this is the BBC, calling all the long-suffering listeners in Britain who for 6 years have had to put up with the acid tones of Mr. Joyce speaking over the same wavelength that I'm using to talk to you now. I'm seated in front of Lord Haw-Haw's own microphone, or rather, the microphone he used in the last 3 weeks of his somewhat checkered career. And after tonight's great news of the surrender of the German forces, I wonder what Lord Haw-Haw's views on the news are now.
Coming up on Tune to Yesterday, this Wednesday, January 4th at 10, it's an hour of drama from the NBC Star Playhouse, then Crime at 11 with episodes of Mr. Chameleon and Dragnet. And this Thursday night at 10 o'clock on January 5th, an hour of mystery from episodes of The Fat Man and The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
You are Herr Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, I presume Graf Otto von Hildenstein is expecting me?
Yeah, Herr Holmes. He was so anxious that you would come here to the manor house.
I left immediately after I got his summons.
He's very weak. He has lost much blood from the injuries he received this morning.
Injuries that no one knows about, eh?
Nein, Herr Holmes. Mm-hmm. Only I, his old and faithful servant, knows.
Also sci-fi to wrap up the night at 11 from X-1 and The Man Who Stole a Planet, a great story on Quiet Please. These shows coming up Wednesday, January 4th and Thursday, January 5th on Tune to Yesterday. And it's my hope by sharing the schedule with you and some highlights, also having it available a month in advance at our website, wrvo.org, that in this on-demand world, you can sort of make an appointment to hear the shows that you want or discover something new. And if there was ever appointment radio from its golden era, it was the radio soap opera. As if they weren't dramatic enough, this Monday, January 2nd, marks what is known as a sad day for the genre, when four popular soaps were canceled from daytime radio. The shows were a staple of the suite of soap operas on the air at the time, and the ones that fell were Backstage Wife, This Is Nora Drake, Our Gal Sunday, and The Road of Life. Maybe not the most recognizable titles today, but they were the equivalent of As the World Turns and General Hospital back then. And they were programs that kept their intended audience, housewives and homemakers, company, really serving as a way to help get through the rigorous chores of the day. And you have to think without today's modern efficient machines to lend a hand. Housework was certainly tougher back then, busying the eyes and hands, but they had an ear for you and their imagination. When soap operas were introduced in the 1930s, radio producers knew that they had a daytime built-in audience of these hard-working homemakers, and the melodramatic stories that had them intrigued would also keep them by the radio during the commercial for typically soap products. So much so that by the end of the 30s, there was upwards of 50 soap operas in rotation on all of the major networks. So the cancellation of these four big shows at the tail end of radio's golden age really marked the end of an era that would eventually lead to a new legacy on television, like radio's Guiding Light, which had started on the air in 1937, and after its cancellation in 1956, was part of TV's daytime lineup for the next 41 years. One of radio's top 10 soaps of all time, The Road of Life, that was among the four that were let go on January 2, 1959, had enjoyed success on two networks for a period broadcast at the same time on CBS and NBC after it started in 1937. By 1940, it had a great audience of about 9 million people who were listening to the adventures of Dr. Jim Brent and his wife Jocelyn, and as with any soap, the interwoven stories of their co-workers, family, and neighbors. So here's what the show sounded like with a radio-related clip from 1945.
The scene is Ella Fitzpatrick's office on the ninth floor of the New York Dispatch building. Seated behind her desk is the nationally known recipe columnist. Standing beside her is her secretary, Miss Brace.
Miss Fitzpatrick, I hope you don't mind my asking. My curiosity is really getting the best of me.
Curiosity? About what, Miss Brace?
That gentleman who came to see you about the broadcast.
Oh.
Are you actually going to be on the radio?
Why, thanks for reminding me. I almost forgot. Yes, I am going to be on the radio next week.
How wonderful.
Yeah, I think so, too. Mr. Norris asked me for tonight, but of course I can't make it on account of my lecture.
What program is it, Mrs. Fitzpatrick?
Why, I don't know the name of it, but it's some kind of forum on station WEBP. Well, here's the paper. I'll look it up on the radio page. Maybe you'd like to listen to it tonight, and tomorrow you can tell me what it's all about.
I'd love to.
Wouldn't be a bad idea for me to know a little bit about what goes on that program. Carol might like to listen, too. Let's see now. That's funny. I can't seem to find any forum listed in the paper.
I'll get the station on the phone for you if you'd like.
Right, girl, that's what you do.
Ella Fitzpatrick's office. Please connect me with station WEBP, will you?
They're getting it. Oh, I've always wanted to be on the radio. I'd like to have a program of my own someday and tell all the ladies...
Hello? One moment, please. Miss Fitzpatrick calling.
Thank you, dear. Hello? Yes, yes, you can help me. I'd like a little information, please. Uh-huh. Well, I'd like to know what time that public service program of yours goes on tonight. Why, the one that discusses outstanding topics of the day. What's that? No discussion program tonight? Oh, you must be mistaken. Perhaps you'd better connect me with someone else. But the manager himself was just here in my office and told me about it. Well, I don't know the name of it, but Mr. Norris said it's been on the air for 6 years. Mr. Norris, the manager. What's that? Loughlin? Well, don't you have anyone there by the name of Norris? I see. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I must have made a mistake. Now, what do you think of that?
I don't understand, Mrs. Fitzpatrick.
There is no Mr. Norris at WEBP, and they don't have a discussion program on tonight.
How do you account for it? I mean...
Oh, I sure fell for that one, didn't I? Oh, it's as plain as a nose on my face.
It is?
Of course. It was just a practical joke, that's what it was. Some of those boys in the editorial room are acting up again. But I'm not going to mention it to a soul. I won't give them the satisfaction of knowing I was fooled. No, indeed.
Well.
I'm pretty clever, though. I'll have to admit that. That fellow who came in here was mighty clever.
The man whose cleverness Ella Fitzpatrick admires so much deserves little credit for his work. Johnson Peck, alias War W. Norris, is a private detective employed by Dr. Carson McVicker, the woman whom Carol believes Jim loves.
Did you get all that at the end? In terms of soap operas on Tune to Yesterday, you're not going to hear many of them, because for one, I think you would like to hear several broadcasts of a certain series in a row, so you can get your mind around the somewhat complicated plot and the intertwining stories. But the bigger reason is not many of them have survived from radio's past. If you consider the fact that some shows were heard 3, 4, even 5 days a week, the cost of materials for a radio station or producer to save these shows would have been astronomical at the time. So all in all, as listeners, we're all pretty lucky for what has been saved, and you can hear some of that windfall this Friday night at 10 on January 6th with sitcoms The Great Gildersleeve, Then Meet Millie, Then it's Horror at 11 with Murder at Midnight and a broadcast of Quiet Please. The Saturday Night Crime kicks things off at 10 with Counter Spy and a broadcast of The Whistler. At 11 o'clock, it's two quiz programs, 20 questions, and Take It or Leave It.
I want you to waste all that effort. All right, for $1, where Madam Chang is first lady?
China.
China is certainly right. Whatever shot for $1. You had a new set of china in your home recently?
No, sir. I would like to have one.
I'm afraid you got the wrong quiz program. No kidding, it's fantastic. You know, the stuff they give away on some of these shows now. I was listening to a radio show the other day. They not only gave away a free rat extermination service, they gave you a 5-year supply of rats.
And you can hear these shows this Friday, January 6th, and Saturday, January 7th from 10 to midnight. So that's going to do it for this week with Sound from Radio's Past. But here are the full shows I talked about on the air on WRVO, on our live stream at WRVO.org. And if you'd like even more old-time radio, then when we're airing it on our public radio station, you can hear it on our second stream that's on our website. It's called WRVO2, and it's broadcasts of Tune to Yesterday from 8 to 10, though unscheduled, so sort of a random grab bag of these episodes that are produced week to week. And as ever, if you have any questions for me about the show, about this podcast, or just a comment saying, hey, this is great, or hey, I want my 20 minutes back, email me, mark@wrvo.org. Thanks a lot for listening.